Even as the Iraq and Afghanistan wars recede into history, problems with traumatic brain injury endure. A study by researchers at Johns Hopkins University finds that those injured before 2007 are most at risk for chronic problems. That's before the Defense Department medical officials started more regular and detailed TBI screenings. Joining me with more, study co-author Rachel Chase from Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Dr. Chase, great to have you on.
I'm really happy to get to talk about combat veterans and invisible injuries. Thank you.
Tell us about the scope and really the goals of the research that you did.
So we began this research to help answer a question that was asked by combat veterans who were deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan. And that was specifically, by how much were deployment-related traumatic brain injuries undiagnosed? And to do that, we first turned to military surveillance data to answer that question. After 2007, that surveillance data showed great increases in traumatic brain injury, primarily because they started to screen for it. Using that data, we create a model that provide a very conservative estimate of undiagnosed traumatic brain injuries. But that conservative estimate was that 80%, and it's 80%, of traumatic brain injuries incurred by deployed service members went undiagnosed early in those wars.
Do we know how many individuals that might have been in total?
Tens of thousands, according to our estimates.
By going undiagnosed, then what is the effect on that person's life after they muster out of the military?
Well, since there are still plenty of those traumatic brain injuries that have never been diagnosed, it was a little hard to get at exactly that answer. So our best attempt was to interview veterans and families of veterans who had been exposed to the most common cause of combat-related traumatic brain injury, which were blasts. So we talked to people who had been deployed before 2007 and sometimes after 2007 as well in a later deployment who had been exposed to multiple blasts. And we asked them what had happened in the decade about since they had been deployed.
I guess one of the problems with these blast-related brain injuries is the same phenomenon that happens in football. They get a blast, an injury, a roadside bomb, or whatever the case might be, and then because there's no external injury, you can't see what's wrong, they try to get back into combat because they don't want to let down the rest of the squad.
Absolutely. And, as you're pointing out, in both scenarios, both in football and in the military, you have these cases where they're very highly motivated to stick with their team and continue to do the job that they're there to do. And, even when they have visible injuries, if they can get back out in the field, they try to. So, of course, if you have an invisible injury and if, traumatic brain injuries aren't really on the military's radar as they were not before 2007, it's quite easy to put yourself at increased risk because we do know that one of the best things that you can do for yourself after a traumatic brain injury is get rest. And that's one thing that these guys were not getting when they were deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan, exposed to blast.
In these interviews, what did you discover about what the long-term effects are?
Well, we didn't try to just focus on, what happened if you had a TBI, because we weren't trying to diagnose TBI. Rather, what we did was look at the holistic experience of service members who had been exposed to blast and very likely incurred a traumatic brain injury. And so, what we saw were that in this decade of experiences that they described, first they told us about, the context of the injury and, it was chaotic after a blast. And no one wanted to be the guy who was complaining about headaches and nausea and disorientation, loss of hearing, changes in sight, or things like that when everyone else was experiencing the same things. And some people had, quote, real injuries like blood and broken bones after a blast. If these veterans did seek help for the issues while they were in the field early on, before TBI was a known issue, not much help was really offered. And then once they returned from deployment, they continued to deal with issues that they faced privately, in part because they thought they were the only ones who were dealing with depression, anxiety, social withdrawal, and volatility. And that was, if they even recognized their own symptoms. A lot of veterans weren't aware of their own memory loss and mood volatility until someone else pointed them out. They often denied their need to seek care because they thought it was completely up to them to deal with their problems on their own. And it usually wasn't until some kind of wake-up call, like a spouse threatening to leave them or losing a job or having some near-death experiences, that they would seek help.
These stories and what you heard, what does that tell us about the treatment that should take place after a blast, or has the DOD addressed that problem since 2007?
Department of Defense has done a lot to address the problem in the field. Not to say that, you know, the screening system is perfect, but, you know, when I talk to veterans who had been deployed after 2010, especially if they, worked in, bomb squads, awareness about traumatic brain injury was quite high, and there are, polytrauma centers now, both as part of the military health system and the veteran health system, that are intended to deal with the, multiple problems that veterans face due to injuries that cause, full system problems or multiple injuries. But, that said, if you have a veteran who, was deployed maybe from 2004 to 2005 and then left the military before any of this screening, and they go to the VA now, they have, major problems that, they're talking about in terms of documentation. They need to prove to the VA that, they have health problems that are related to their service. And, blast exposure and traumatic brain injuries weren't documented back then. In fact, blast exposure still is not being documented in the military. So to provide that documentation is quite difficult. And so, what veterans often spoke about was having to, fight for their care. And their families echoed this sentiment that families of both current service members and veterans felt as though, their veterans wouldn't have gotten the care they did without, kind of the entire family getting involved to advocate for them.
Rachel Chase is a researcher with Johns Hopkins University's Department of Public Health. And let me ask you this, when it comes to treatment of traumatic brain injury, is the phenomenon true here that the sooner you get treatment, the more effective it is, almost like a heart attack or a stroke where that first golden hour is so important, or is it less of a factor in TBI?
It's, in fact, very important to get early care when possible. That said, if a veteran is thinking, wow, I incurred this blast, this injury, 10 years ago, if they're experiencing problems, they should still be seeking care. We can only improve care if we know what these patients are facing, and it will get better as more people are consistently coming to physicians with the same problems, and we begin to recognize patterns, and we can provide better care, understanding their needs.
Are there physiological markers for TBI? Can you do a brain scan of some kind, of an MRI, and see it?
We're still working on that, and we have definitely improved, especially, diffuse tensor imaging, for example, is a type of MRI that is now available that can see a lot of the injuries that, occur with blast injury. But there are a lot of different technologies that we're trying to develop currently. Most of the advances that we're seeing where we can kind of definitively tell a difference in brains of blast-exposed veterans versus others when we're able to actually cut their brains up. So unfortunately, for those who want to keep their brains in their head, it's a little more difficult. But we're definitely working on biomarkers. And again, the more people who are seeking care for it, the more that we can understand what's going on. If it's an invisible population to us, it's very difficult to do the studies necessary to improve identification and care.
Now, you were a math and English teacher in China, and we're hoping to go back to do that. So you came into this field of TBI research in kind of an unusual way. Tell us about that.
So my brother was was an Iraq veteran with the Army, and through connections with him, some veterans found out that I was getting my PhD in international health, and they thought to come to me and ask, if I would be interested in doing this study. And initially, I, just thought, like, I really want to go back to China. But the more that I looked into it, I realized it was very hard to find, research that was describing the experiences that they were talking about. And I thought, you know, the research community needs to know about this. So, yeah, I did a bit of a turnaround to start this research.
And so what happens with this research now? Has it been presented to, say, VA or to DOD, or what will be the practical effect of it?
Well, you know, our first step is to publish in, you know, peer-reviewed literature. And so, you know, we've got two papers out from this project now. A third one will come out in Military Medicine in February. And, you know, getting this public discourse is really one of the most important ways of getting the attention of, you know, other researchers, of, you know, politicians who are engaging in the reform of, you know, the VA, the military health system, and of other stakeholders in this process. So, you know, getting the conversation going about, you know, invisible effects of, you know, combat, you know, and combat injuries is, you know, kind of an important step, really, in this entire process.
And how is your brother doing?
My brother's doing great. He's on his way to be an anesthesiologist at this point, so he's doing pretty well.
Medical Family. Rachel Chase is researcher with Johns Hopkins University's Department of Public Health. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends. 55 past the hour, this is the Federal Drive with Tom Temin. Follow us on Facebook.com/Federal News Radio and on Twitter. Our handle is @FedNewsRadio.